and Norm Shealy. Norm Shealy. You are listening to Infinite Consciousness, your infinite access to the world
of the mind.
Hi, this is Eva Herr, and thanks for listening tonight. Thanks for taking the time out of your schedule to be with us. Tonight I have with us Dr. Stephen Zodkoy, and we're going to talk about Steve's work with adrenal fatigue and PTSD from a holistic perspective. And Steve's got a new book coming out soon. I don't think it has a title yet, but we'll talk about that some tonight. So, Dr. Zodkoy, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
And if you don't mind, before we get started, if you'd just tell us a little bit about you and where people can find you if they want to connect up with you or see what you're doing. Do you have a website?
I do. My office website is mammothadvancedmedicine.com. And luckily, my last name is I'm the only one. So they could just type in Dr. Zodkoy, which is Zodkoy, and I'm all over the web. And we did pick a title for the book. It's called Misdiagnosis, The Adrenal Fatigue Link. And one of the reasons we chose that book title is because so many of the cases I see have been misdiagnosed and have really turned out to be adrenal fatigue, so we went with that title. It's hard to pick a title for a book, as you know. I'm trying to get a title out there that will pique interest and let people know that there is hope, even when traditional medicine fails. There are other things that could be looked at. I always like to think that every patient is treatable. You just got to find the right doctor. A little bit about me. I went to chiropractic school and graduated in 1989. And while I was in chiropractic school, I realized that my education was great, but it wasn't enough. So I immediately signed up and became a certified nutritionist, which goes perfectly with chiropractic. It's another part of the puzzle. And I also became an applied kinesiologist, which uses manual muscle testing to really help diagnose the patients. And it seems to be much more accurate than lab testing and a lot of these fancy tests that we run, which only give us a sliver of what's going on with somebody. And over the years, I was the first chiropractor to receive my certified nutritional specialist. Before me, it was only allowed for PhDs and MDs. And I hold a diplomat, two different diplomats in nutrition. Diplomat American Clinical Board and Diplomat Chiropractic Board of Nutrition. And I spend a lot of time in private practice and educating other physicians on how to do clinical nutrition.
Now, just so we know, do you do phone consultations?
I do phone consultations, and actually a lot of the work I've been doing recently is around the world because of the interest in the work I've been doing with the military has really sprung interest from all around the world, and it's very easy to do the phone consultation with the type of work that I'm doing now because of the questionnaires that have been developed. They're online questionnaires that really pinpoint issues, and they correlate really, really well with lab tests. So over the years, we've actually, even in the office, have pulled away from doing traditional blood tests and rely more and more on these questionnaires because they're just as reliable. You can do them anywhere, and they're non-invasive. And it's a huge cost savings also.
Certainly. So my listeners are probably going to know about applied kinesiology, because we talk about things like that all the time, so they're going to be familiar with that. What they probably need information most on is the adrenal fatigue and your PTSD work. So if we could just move into that would be great. Could we just start at the beginning and tell us, most of them are probably going to know the phrase of adrenal fatigue. So if we could just go in, how do you know if you have it? What are the symptoms that one might suffer?
Sure. Adrenal fatigue is the most common term we use, but it's really adrenal dysfunction. Adrenal fatigue is the end stage when the most noticeable symptoms occur of, you know, fatigue, anxiety, depression, totally worn out. But really, adrenal dysfunction starts earlier. And the typical person who develops adrenal dysfunction, which turns into adrenal fatigue, is they're usually a type A. They're a go, go, go type of person. And they, you know, a lot of times I hear, well, you know, I used to strive under stress. Stress doesn't bother me. And that's how they grew up, and they very, very motivated people. Usually they're very, very successful, and, you know, a lot of physicians, a lot of business people, you know, the person who's running a marathon, taking care of the family, and running a business on the side. These are the type of people who tend to get adrenal fatigue. And then as time goes on, they start to realize that they can't handle the physical and emotional stress. So what they used to become motivated and ready to go when they have a ton of things to do, now they feel weighed down. And the thing about adrenal fatigue, adrenal dysfunction, is it shows itself in so many different ways, and every person is a little different. Some people may just show it physically, where they end up with chronic joint pain and muscle pain, or just chronic fatigue. Other people may show it emotionally, where they're just showing up with anxiety and depression or PTSD. But most people will have a combination of symptoms, and some will be emotional and some will be physical. You know, these are your chronic fatigue people, your fibromyalgia people. And the typical person will just run from doctor to doctor to doctor with get this diagnosis, another diagnosis, and really never get them themselves healing or feeling healthy again. And one of the key ways we diagnose adrenal fatigue in my office is you just listen to the patient's history. Nobody walks in and just says, you know, I'm tired, and they came to me. Usually, everybody is, I've seen two or three different doctors, I've seen four doctors, I've tried this, I've tried that, you know, I used to have physical pain, now I have physical and emotional pain, my doctor says I'm, you know, a hypochondriac. And it's usually started off with one or two problems, and then over the course of six months to a year, it really developed into multiple facets. And that's the key, it's multiple facets. And that's when you really know you have adrenal fatigue. When your elbow hurts, your knee hurts, and you have anxiety for no particular reason, that's a good sign. We had a woman the other day, great example of a case. She came in, and for the last 7 years, she's had terrible gastrointestinal pain. And the doctors told her she may have celiac, she may have IBS, she may have colitis. They did all the tests, and nobody can give her a diagnosis. And I'm talking to her, and we're really going over this discussion. I'm like, well, when is your problem the worst? And she goes, you know, I keep telling everybody it only happens when I have my menstrual cycle. And so I explained to her, I'm like, well, if you have celiac or you have IBS or colitis, that's all the time. That doesn't come and go with your menstrual cycle. If your menstrual cycle is involved with this and you're getting physical complaints for it, obviously it's a hormonal problem. Then she goes, well, you know, I also have joint pain and light sensitivity and anxiety now. And you can see it's developed. And she actually she didn't have celiac. She didn't have colitis. She didn't have irritable bowel syndrome. What she did have was adrenal fatigue. And the adrenals were affecting her hormone levels, which were later affecting her bowels. And within 2 weeks of putting her on some nutritional supplements, she was like 70, 80% better. She felt great, went through her first menstrual cycle in 9 years without severe abdominal pain.
I don't mean to get up in the weeds here, but that interests me. How does adrenals correlate with hormones? Because I don't know, that topic of hormones, I'm 54 today, as a matter of fact, and I've noticed that over the past bit of time, first I had estrogen dominance, and then I changed some things, and all of a sudden, one day after I changed my diet, I suddenly look like and feel like I work out in a gym all the time, even though I don't. So my somehow my hormones switch, and it interests me. How does that connect? And I know I had adrenal fatigue, so how does that connect?
It's very simple. The adrenals actually are a core hormone producer and neurotransmitter producer, so they are affecting the endocrine system and the nervous system all the time. But what a lot of people don't understand, and a lot of women with menopause symptoms of hot flashes, again, related to adrenal fatigue. And the reason for it is progesterone, estrogen, and testosterone are all made up of what's called DHEA. And DHEA is produced by the adrenal glands. But also, the adrenal glands do produce forms of progesterone, testosterone, and estrogen themselves. So this is very, very interesting. When you're 20 and 30 and your ovaries are pumping out a huge amount of progesterone and estrogen, the amount that the adrenals make is very, very unimportant. It's leftover. But as your ovaries stop producing progesterone and estrogen, even though the adrenals are producing the same amount, it becomes more and more important, because when you turn 40, 45, the adrenals now actually become the main source of progesterone and estrogen for your body, and testosterone for women. So what's happening is that they become more and more important to women when they start to hit 40 and 50. And so if your adrenals are fatigued or dysfunctional, and they have to decide between making hormones for you to deal with stress and anxiety or making hormones for you to have a balanced menstrual cycle, they tend to go more towards stress and anxiety, because that's more life-threatening. And progesterone and estrogen is much more for reproductive life, which is really, at that stage, is past for those people. And that's why when we have women who have hot flashes, we tend to give them an adrenal support and DHEA, and then their body will be able to produce its own progesterone and estrogen at the right levels, and their symptoms disappear. It's a very simple and safe solution for that problem.
So how do you give DHEA? Do you do pregnenolone, or do you do some DHEA supplement? That interests me too. And I promise I'm not going to get off the weeds too much here. It's just interesting.
we use DHEA supplements directly, and also give
pregnenolone. Do you ever use?
No, we don't. We try and give the body the core, the basic, and let it divide it up the way it wants to. So DHEA is can be readily turned into a number of different hormones. So it has a lot. If you give it as a simple base, it basically does it on its own. And at the same time, we do give adrenal glandulars and adrenal adaptogens, so that the body can handle making some of the more stressful hormones, and not have to worry too much about producing the DHEA. And those two things together work really well.
What kind of adaptogens do you use?
Well, we use several different types. I'm a big fan of glandulars for patients. I find that glandulars are excellent for helping to rejuvenate the adrenal glands. And we usually use those first thing in the morning, because they tend to be very, very powerful. And then we use a combinations of different adaptogens. Ashwagandha, rhodiola tend to be extremely popular with people. And those are the ones we usually tend to use the most at this point.
Okay. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to get off. It just interests me so much.
Oh, no. Hey, any topic of interest is worth talking about. And again, it's interesting, because when you talk about adrenal dysfunction, adrenal fatigue, it can be anything from, again, anxiety to menopause it's involved in. It could be gastrointestinal problems to rapid blinking. These are all symptoms that I've seen in the last 2 weeks, different people. So it's a wide area that it's involved in. And one of the reasons I chose to write a book on this is because it affects so many people. Almost everybody now has, we're talking about right now in the United States, 8 to 10% of the population is on an anti-anxiety, and another 8 to 10% are on an antidepressant. You're talking about at least 20% of our population is on some sort of.
Are you sure those numbers are right? I'm shocked. I thought
you know
it
what?
Was
I just got 80%. Those.
80%.
I just got those numbers out of a New York Times article, so they're pretty accurate. And that varies a lot, too, because now we're just talking about specific anxiety medications and depression medications, but how many patients are on Lyrica for leg pain, which is also they're using now for anxiety and depression. So there's a huge amount of medications that are used black label to treat anxiety and depression that aren't counted in those numbers. So maybe it is a lot higher than the number I gave. But go right ahead.
I'm sorry, go ahead. I was just going to say, I just can't imagine that's only 8%.
No, 8 to 10% are on anxiety, and another 8 to 10% are on antidepressants, were the numbers we just got from the New York Times. So it's over 20% of the population when you really look at it.
So I would suspect, and I'm supporting you here, I'm not arguing with you. That it's probably like 90% of the people who suffer, but maybe because of all the bad publication and all the bad things that drugs have been doing, they're walking around suffering all the time. I just can't imagine only 8 or 10% of our population is sick with this. Everybody
I
know has it.
Adrenal fatigue or depression and anxiety?
Well, both. All of those things. You know,
that's the whole thing.
What are all of them?
They all come together. I mean, if you have anxiety or depression, more likely than not, your body is so tired of trying to deal with it that you end up with adrenal fatigue. But more likely than not, you have adrenal fatigue first, and then the anxiety and depression is just a symptom of it. And people have to understand is that the adrenal dysfunction comes from the fact our bodies aren't meant for the 21st century. You go back, and not even that long ago, go back 50 years ago. I mean, if you had one phone in the house, and we're only talking about the 1960s, if you had one phone in the house, that would be pretty typical. But not even everybody had a phone. Now, you know, nobody had computers. You know, nobody had long-distance phone calls. You waited by the mail. You know, our lives, our bodies are designed for a much slower pace than we're giving ourselves right now. I mean, I know, the minute my wife gets up, she's got to look at her phone to see what messages came in during the night, and you know what she has to do for the day, and doesn't even have time to get out of bed before she gets started with it, with this type of stress and anxiety that we all basically suffer with, and that continuous on motion is what really causes adrenal fatigue, and this is also one of the reasons that we're seeing such a huge amount of PTSD and burnout in the military. It comes from the way the world has changed.
I'm going to give you opportunity to do that PTSD, to talk about your PTSD specifically on the second half of the show.
So sure.
I don't think I'm ignoring that. But since you're a nutritionist, I want to know, do you find... Well, I've got two questions here. Do you find any relationship between adrenal fatigue and specific nutritional deficiencies like B vitamins, B12, B6, or whatever, or any ones that you know of, or iodine or minerals? And secondly, let's see, I lost how I was going to say this question. Well, I forgot how I was going to ask the next question, so just go ahead with that, and maybe I'll think of it again.
Well, one of the things that we find with patients with adrenal dysfunction, adrenal fatigue, is the fact that their body has lost its alkaline balance. And the alkaline balance is the pH that the body is able to maintain. And people with adrenal fatigue, they can check their saliva, and every single one of them will be extremely acidic. That doesn't mean if you're acidic that you have adrenal fatigue, but it definitely means that you have a health issue. And part of it is the quality of the food. And again, stress causes a lot of acidity in the body through the nervous system and through the endocrine system. So people with adrenal fatigue who have been under a lot of stress or feel a lot of stress, their whole body becomes acidic. And acidity in the body causes inflammation. Inflammation causes pain and degeneration. Now, as for specific nutrients, I don't believe that there's one or two specific nutrients that are related to adrenal fatigue. because what we what I found over the last 25 years is these people have worn themselves out at every level. They've brought their body so far into the acidity that they need everything. They need to make a total dietary lifestyle change. And part of the problem is that a lot of these people, when you have adrenal fatigue and you have the fatigue, the chronic fatigue or the fibromyalgia that goes with it, and you're so drawn out and you're so depressed, is the thing they turn to is their coffee. And the more and more coffee you drink or the other stimulant, caffeine and soda, the more of that you drink, the more acidic your body becomes. The more acidic your body becomes, the more you have a need for all the nutrients, all the fruits, all the vegetables, all the alkalining foods available. So it's not really one specific or two specific nutrients that I find are needed. I really like to put a patient on an alkaline diet and make sure that we really move their pH up the scale. That does a great deal to relieve all of their physical pain. It helps their emotional pain, and it really helps with the healing process.
Could you talk to us a little bit about what that alkaline diet is?
Sure. An alkaline diet is really everything your grandmother always told you. Foods, when you eat a food, it either causes acidity in your body or alkalinity in your body. Alkalining is calming and refreshing, and acidity is fiery and burning. So people with arthritis have a lot of what's called arachidonic acid, acidity. It causes pain. So the types of food that cause acidity are white flour, they're sugar, it's caffeine, it's soda, it's chemical compounds found in artificial coloring, flavoring, and preservatives. And red meat and protein foods. Whereas the food that causes alkalinity, which is calming and soothing, like when you have an upset stomach, you take baking soda, which is an alkaline, but the foods that actually do it are a lot of the vegetables and whole grains and fruits actually all tend to be much more alkaline than the foods I mentioned before. So it's everything we all know. Fruits, vegetables, whole grains, good. Soda, coffee, white flour, and too many sweets are bad. This is all stuff we know. And dairy. Dairy also is very, very, causes a lot of acidity in the body. We know that we should really limit those if we want to be healthy, if we want to be thin, if we want to stay young. But we tend to, through stress and anxiety, those are the foods we tend to go to for emotional relief. But they tend to just cause a more vicious problem, causing more acidity in the body, and the more acidity, the more pain, the more emotional instability you have.
So you mentioned beef and dairy. I have a question about that. We
sure.
have I am a meat eater. However, in the
and
past
so am I,
6 months,
way.
I've switched my meat to we only eat grass-fed beef and cheese and milk. And I don't know if you know this, but I had a heart attack a year ago, a big heart attack, September a year ago. And ever since then, I don't really have a doctor. I kind of am managing my own health care with the help of my friends, my medical friends in the alternative field. And so I do use allopathic doctor lab tests. And so I was able to get my cholesterol under control, which was over the roof. But I kept having high inflammatory markers. And I had a lab test last week, as a matter of fact, and I've gotten all my numbers back down. I eat as much meat as I want, but it only went down when I changed from regular meat to grass-fed. Even though I ate organic, it didn't go down until I started eating grass-fed meat, dairy, and cheese. Do you have a comment about that?
Sure.
We don't eat any grains. So even from chickens, we eat the cage-free. So can you comment?
Sure. First of all, if you're on an alkaline diet, like I just mentioned, you still eat meat. I keep an alkaline diet myself. My whole family does. Well, my kids still eat, red meat. We still eat chicken. But you eat a controlled portion of it. You eat a normal portion is, 4 ounces. It's not a 16-ounce T-bone steak every day. So the meat itself is not You don't have to give it up completely, but you have to make it a smaller portion, part of your dinner. So if you have a 4 ounces serving of meat and you have a 12-ounce portion of vegetables, you're still keeping yourself much more alkaline because of the power of the vegetables. So you don't have to give up total. You don't have to become a vegetarian to become go on an alkaline diet. Now, as for yours, why would grass-fed meat be better than the grain-fed meat? It's very simple. I mean, livestock is supposed to be wild and eat grains and grass and digest that. So if you have a animal, even if it's organic and it's eating grains, and it's eating this similar grains to what we are, grains are inflammatory to us. Grains are inflammatory to livestock, and that's just going to get transferred into your own system. So you're basically, whatever a cow is eating is what you're eating. And that's one of the reasons people like to eat organic, is because the way pent-up animals are fed is really, we don't want to go into that, but it's really quite disgusting, and you really don't want that in your system. So grass-fed beef or chickens that are naturally grazed will have a much lower acidity in their system, and that acidity, the lower acidity will pass on to you, so it'll cause less inflammation. And all heart disease, I mean, is inflammation. Cholesterol is not the best indicator of heart disease. It's the inflammatory markers that really tell whether somebody's going to have a heart attack or not. You can have extremely high cholesterol, but no inflammation in the blood vessels. So even though the blood is a little thicker, it's still going through the blood vessels. But when those blood vessels are inflamed, that's and tightening up and constricted, that's when people tend get heart attacks.
Thank you for sharing that. I think that's really important.
I have actually one more comment on that.
Please go as much as you have to say. I'm interested.
one of my pet peeves are these statin drugs. Has to be the biggest scam in medical history. $20 billion a year are spent on these drugs in the United States with no measurable change in the quality of health. Business Week in 2010, January of 2010, did a whole article.
Sorry. You
go
mean
ahead.
No measurable good change in health?
Yes.
As soon as they gave it to me when I came out of the hospital, I immediately got diabetes. A week after
yes.
I went off, it was gone.
And that's common. I mean, but what they find is that a typical drug, let's say, good or bad, let's use an antibiotic. If 11 people take an antibiotic, 10 people get better on it. With statins, they're estimating it's anywhere between 500 and 5,000 have to take it to help one person. Now,
really?
With 16% of the people having a serious side effect from the drug, where are we getting any benefits from this? And these are actual numbers that come from the drug companies. These aren't, you know, my numbers. These are actually the drug companies' numbers. Even the main drug, the Lipitor, the gold standard for statins, they tout it as reducing your chances of heart attack by 33%. But that number is so misleading, because what they did was they took two groups. They took a high-risk group of people, 5,000, and a regular group of people. And what they found is that the high-risk group, one, would have 150 heart attacks, and the high-risk group with the statin would have 100 heart attacks. So it's a 50% difference, or 1%. So you're really only helping 1% of high-risk people who take the drug. And it takes 39 months of those 5,000 people to be on that drug to get help that 1%. So we're basically putting 5,000 people on a drug for over three years to maybe save 1% of them. And we know that 16% of them are going to have serious side effects from it. This is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. My last point on this one is, when the FDA had to review statins, it was a 9-person review board. 8 of them were receiving monetary rewards from drug companies for the work they do with statins. I mean,
you hate to sound like conspiracy,
but that's really where we're at with this one.
So before we go off, do you know of a natural statin that you want to talk about?
Well, like again, when you're looking at for people with heart conditions, if you really want to know if you're at a risk for a heart disease, Baylor Medical School did a great has a great website. It's called, well, look up Baylor Medical School lipid classes. But anyway, you really want to note what your HDLs are, the good cholesterol, and your triglyceride levels are. And the ratio between the two of them should be less than two. Less than one is great. And the reason nobody looks to raise their HDLs, doctors don't look to raise your HDLs or lower your triglycerides, is it's very simple. A gram of fish oil a day will lower your triglycerides, and 1,500 milligrams of niacin will raise your HDLs. So you're basically talking about two things right off the shelf can pretty much reduce the need for medication for heart conditions. And those are standard numbers, by the way.
Is there one form of niacin that's better than the other, or does it matter?
We use, you want niacin. You don't want any of the non-flush ones. You want the flush. The flush is actually what opens up the blood vessels. And then
so
the fish oil is
nicotinic acid?
Yes.
Is that the nicotinic acid one? Okay.
No, people don't know about that.
No.
You just want niacin. You just want plain niacin.
What about nicotinic acid?
Nicotinic acid or inositolic acid is usually time-released, and it's not nearly as effective as just plain niacin.
Okay.
And plain niacin is cheaper.
Okay.
And fish oil, you just get a very pure brand. Nordic Natural is a great one, or Carlson's is a great one. And about a gram a day really tends to lower triglycerides.
Excellent. So
I got one more point about the niacin.
Okay.
There's a lot, if the time, Chris, you can go over the different types of it. We use plain niacin. That tends to be the best one. But we've seen the same results with some of the nicotinic acids and niacin and inositolic acid. They all tend to do good work. The plain niacin seems to be the best.
I think I remember Eben Hopper telling me that plain niacin was best. I don't know where I got off on nicotinic acid.
Well, that's the one that's non-flush, so people don't like the redness.
No, it definitely flushes.
Most people don't flush with that
Ask
one.
Me how,
but,
no.
so that's why people tend to go to these other ones. But again, you're heading in the right path when you're taking that.
Yes, I moved my dose from 250 at a dose to 500. I was at Whole Foods the other day and got, I mean, literally caught on fire, so that the cash register lady said, "Are you all right? Are you about to pass out or something, lady?" I was on fire. So do you want to now talk to us about, is there anything else you want to talk about your adrenals and nutrition?
Well, we're going to talk a little bit about the PTSD, and you know what? The whole things are all tied in together, so we can go on tangents as we go through this.
Well, I was just going to ask you to go into your PTSD. Tell us about the study that you've recently done. First of all, tell us how you got connected. What made you start doing this?
Well, I had, at the time, a colonel, who actually was a woman, come into my office, and one of her daughters had a terrible, terrible hip. And They wanted to do surgery to her hip, and through the applied kinesiology, within a couple of weeks, the daughter's hip was dramatically better, and the mother was amazed and very happy. And, you know, she basically mentioned that the daughter was having terrible anxiety, just as an off note. And I said, I do this technique, and it's called neuro-emotional technique, which uses visualization and acupuncture, along with nutrition, to basically relieve the stress in the body and rebuild the body so that the person feels better. And I go, if you like, we can do this over 2 weeks. And over the course of 2 weeks, basically, the daughter did fantastic. The mother was thrilled. And she turns to me. She goes, I'm a colonel in the Marine Corps. And she goes, I have a couple of my Marines who are suffering with anxiety from their tours. She goes, would you look at them? And I was like, sure. So we took a look at them, and over the course of a couple of weeks, they did extremely well. And at that point, she actually had me speak to another general, and this general's son, this is about 2 years ago, was in Afghanistan, and there was a skirmish, and the Afghani troops turned on the American troops. It was a big mess. And anyway, they all came back, and this Marine, couldn't function. He was diagnosed with terrible PTSD, anxiety, depression, and fibromyalgia. And his father, who is a general, flew him from Hawaii to New Jersey, where I practice. And for 2 weeks, we put him on nutrients for about a month before he got here. He came in for about 2 weeks every day. And within 10 days, he felt great, flew back to Hawaii, passed his physical exam, passed his psych exam, and went back into combat. And I actually spoke to him about 60 days ago, and he's great. He actually just went through recon, which is like the Marine Corps' Navy SEAL program. And this was very exciting for the Marine Corps because they have so many people suffering with PTSD that there was a discussion if we can do this on a larger scale. And so we went through the process of trying to figure out how to do this on a larger scale. But the military is not set up to do anything aggressive like this. The new ideas are not their specialty. And the doctors in military medicine, especially the ones I've had to speak to, are not looking forward to trying anything new. They're very, very happy to give out the drugs and the medications and just write these soldiers and Marines off. So we put together a program using outside sources and got approval to speak to the Marines and put together a program to see what could be done for these Marines using just nutrition. And the study went really, really well. Now, the interesting thing is I actually really never met any of the participants. We had them fill out online questionnaires. We had them do a lab testing that was sent to their house. They collected urine and saliva. And from that, they were put on a specific nutritional protocol. And the nutritional protocol was basically to stabilize their adrenal systems and their neurotransmitter systems. And we followed up 3 months later and then 6 months later. The 90-day follow-up after 3 months, the average participant improved 41%, and by the end of the study, which was 180 days, the average participant improved 83%, with I think it was 60% of them becoming totally asymptomatic. No side effects, no medications, nobody had to change their lifestyle. These guys all stayed on active duty. They didn't have to change their diet. These are Marines, so they're physically active, which is a big help. But what this study showed is that we could be treating Marines and soldiers so much more efficiently and so much more effectively if we would stop giving them the drugs and fix the core underlying nutritional problems. Now, the biggest problem we noticed through the study is that adrenal fatigue is rampant in every single one of these participants. And then the military is spending a lot of money right now trying to figure out why these Marines and soldiers are developing PTSD and other anxiety and depression. And what they've found out is very, very interesting. And the crux of it is this, is that when you are in combat or a stressful situation, that your body produces a huge amount of cortisol, which is basically part of the fight-or-flight mechanism. So you want to be ready for that fight. You want to be ready to have all the energy you need, be mentally aware to be in a fight. And what happens is that when the fight is over, your body's supposed to produce a lot of DHEA. And this brings us back to our conversation before. DHEA is produced by the adrenal glands. But if your adrenal glands are fatigued, you'd never start to produce the DHEA. So the cortisol stays in the brain, and when the cortisol stays in the brain, so does the memory of the trauma. And that's actually how the PTSD gets stuck, or the PTSD gets stuck in the brain, and why these guys are so fixated on these events. Because they have adrenal fatigue, their body never has the opportunity to produce the DHEA that would wash away the bad memory. A couple of interesting points here is combat, and this goes back to lifestyles that we live today. When you fought a war 100 years ago, 99% of all the time you were in the war, you were quiet. You didn't do anything. You know, you were sitting in a trench, and, you know, every 2 or 3 weeks you would run over the hill and run back. And while it was violent, it was short-lived. And while you were in your trench, while it wasn't pleasant, you weren't, you know, your life wasn't totally threatened. Nowadays, when you're in a combat zone, and a combat zone can be anywhere now, you're never safe. Even our green zone in the Middle East are constantly being bombarded. You have soldiers attacking from within. So Marines and soldiers never get downtime to relax. So their adrenals are constantly working, and that's where the adrenal fatigue comes in. And you could, you could push these guys to go back into combat and get them psyched up to fight the battle, but because their adrenals are so weak, they can't produce the other hormones that are supposed to wash away and get them to relax. So a lot of what we were trying to do when we were doing the study was actually allowing the adrenal glands to switch on and off. We don't want to shut them off completely. We just want them to go on and off when they're supposed to be. And that's why, again, adrenal fatigue is the common term used, but adrenal dysfunction is actually much more accurate.
So I'm just thinking about that. What is the relationship with addiction? Or is there anything with addiction? My son's suffering this right now, as a matter of fact.
Sure. Addiction and adrenal fatigue is huge. That has to do with anybody who has like a sex addiction or a gambling addiction is really looking to stimulate their brain. What's happened is their adrenals are so weak, normal stimulation doesn't do it for them anymore, so they have to super stimulate in order to trigger the adrenals to produce the hormones and the endorphins that they really would like. And that's why addiction comes in with this.
Now you raise up another question.
Sure.
I have one of my avid listeners,
mm-hmm.
who happens to be a physician. And of all things, he has a sex addiction. And he has tried everything. I mean, everything. Do you have any words of wisdom to him? Would it help him to? He's somewhere else in another state, but
yeah,
did I
mean,
have him? Can you help you, that?
Yes, we've actually, like, again, sex addiction, not so much drug addiction or smoking sometimes,
I think it's
but really
porn addiction that he has.
Yeah, sex addiction and gambling addiction is really, they're just trying to stimulate their brain to function the way they want to function. Because, you know, let's face it, sex is great. Gambling is exciting. And the funny thing is, when you talk to these people, I've talked to quite a few and treated quite a few of them, is it's not even the winning or the losing that matters. It's not even, you know, it's the actual just doing it that just triggers them to get enough excitement so that they feel normal. So a lot of that, again, is their adrenals may not be totally shut off. They're just not turning on and off the way a normal person does, so they don't feel the highs and lows, okay?
Makes perfect sense.
Right. So a lot of times, like I had this woman come in the other day, and actually about a month ago, and very difficult case. This woman comes in, she's like, I've seen every alternative doctor, I've been on every medication. She goes, I feel like I'm producing an unbelievable amount of adrenaline. I just feel, you know, a nervous wreck. I feel my heart pacing all the time. And we did there's physical exams you can actually do for adrenal fatigue. I did those in the office, and I told her right away, I go, you know what? And she actually had lab work that showed her cortisol levels were normal. The problem is this. The cortisol levels have to match your emotional stress. If your emotional stress is huge and you have normal cortisol levels, there's still a difference between the two of them. So if you're experiencing a stress level that's a 10 and your adrenals are producing an 8, and 8 is a normal range, there's still a difference between the amount of stress you're producing and the amount of cortisol you're producing. So even though this woman felt like she had too much adrenaline in her system, we actually had to give her nutritional support to actually boost it up to match her stress level and then teach her to lower her stress level and bring her cortisol with that. And that's what you have to do with sex addicts and gambling addicts, is you actually have to give them enough energy so that they don't feel the need to do their addiction, and then retrain them to calm down and not rely on that. Because a lot of times these people go through treatments and therapies with all the good intentions in the world. But if you don't feel right while you're going through it, nobody could stick with it. So if you actually mm-hmm. give them the stimulus they need so that they don't feel that itch, then the other training tends
that makes
to work
sense.
Really well.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
And that's why we've had great success with what we're doing. We're not trying to force the body to do what we think is right. We're giving the body all the nutrients it needs to calm itself down and rebalance it itself. One of the things we mentioned before was adaptogens. And adaptogens, by nature, are nutritional supplements that basically balance the body. Whether the body is a little too high or the energy low, a little too high, a little too low, it pulls it back into homeostasis. Because the adrenal glands are supposed to be high sometimes and low sometimes. And if that person gets stuck too high or too low or can't switch back and forth, they have dysfunction and they have symptoms. And again, those symptoms could be physical or emotional.
So you said something earlier about there are physical exams that you can do to tell. Can you give us, what are those?
Sure. These are ones that I've come up with over the years, taking them from other physicians that have touched on the subject. I've been looking at this for adrenal fatigue, adrenal dysfunction, since I've been in school, 25 years. We touched on it years ago. But it's so much more prevalent today that it's just a huge epidemic in the United States. And we used to do sophisticated lab tests, which we still do, but I could tell right in the office from the person's history usually, and then a physical exam. And there's a couple of tests you could do that are very, very simple. If you have a person lie down, 30 seconds, and then stand up very, very quickly. If they get dizzy, lightheaded, just for a moment, that's a good sign that their adrenals are challenged. There's also a more sophisticated one where you do what's called orthostatic hypotension, where you check the blood pressure lying down and then standing up. And if it doesn't change the right way, that's another good sign of adrenal fatigue. A very easy one is we take a strong muscle and we shine a light in their eyes and retest the muscle while the light's shining in their eye, because the pupil constriction is controlled by the adrenal glands adrenal glands are at least involved with that. And if the muscle goes weak, we know that person, again, has adrenal fatigue. And usually when you say that, when we do that study and we shine a light, the person's like, oh, I don't like that. I don't like to drive at night either. Because mm-hmm. they can't hold the pupil constriction, so the light really irritates them. Another simple test, and this is good for people with fibromyalgia, and I've got to say, I've treated thousands of people with fibromyalgia successfully, and one of the biggest things is everybody with fibromyalgia is completely acidic when you check their saliva. It's very, very acidic. That's where their pain is coming from, and completely weak adrenal fatigue, adrenal gland. And when your adrenals are weak, one of the things that happens is it doesn't repair collagen. Collagen is mostly found in the skin, the bones, and the muscles. It's found in the skin and the muscles.
Connective tissue.
Yeah, the connective tissue. And this is the important thing. The highest concentration of collagen is found in the tendons and ligaments. So if you have a problem with your adrenals, the adrenals won't produce the hormones needed to actually repair the tendons and ligaments. And that's why these people tend to have, you know, their ankle hurt them one day, and next week it's their hip, and then next week it's their muscles, because the whatever you're using is becoming irritated. So if you take a strong muscle and in the arm, let's say, and you tug on it lightly, the ligaments will become stretched, and since they don't get repaired, if you retest the muscle quickly, it'll actually be weak again. And every patient I've ever had for fibromyalgia, and you know, I've done huge workshops on fibromyalgia, every single one of them is acidic, so they have a lot of inflammation in their muscles and joints, and their adrenals are shot, and their ligaments are weak, which allows the muscles to go into spasm. And this is why they have fibromyalgia, and that's also why they have the emotional component, because of the adrenal fatigue. You know, so where other doctors are finding it so difficult to treat these fibromyalgia patients, really an alkaline diet and adrenal supplementation really works extremely well.
Another question I have now, talking about your alkalinity testing, when you test your saliva in your mouth,
mm-hmm.
is it different? Two questions here. Is it different? Should the number be different than your urine? And that's number one. And then secondly, what do you like that number to be if it's saliva or urine?
We don't tend to test urine as much. One, it's not as easy to do, and the number doesn't change as quickly as, the number changes depending upon what you ate the night before.
Okay.
So we tend to use saliva. It's quick, it's simple, it's repeatable, whereas urine, you have to kind of get a long-standing pattern to see what you're on. I think long-term urine is better. And again, you know, so with saliva, we like it to be 7.0 to 7.2. But when we're testing people and you're looking at people with like fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue, adrenal fatigue, you're not trying to decide between, you know, 6.6 and 6.8. You're really looking at people who are down at 5.2. A lot of these people, they don't even change, you know, the paper becomes wet but won't change the color. Most people with adrenal fatigue, they're so acidic, they're not even close to being in the range. So it's not even, the regular pH paper, I think, goes from 5 to 8, and most people who have adrenal fatigue are between 5 and 6, and we like it to be at 7, 7.2. When people check their saliva and, you know, we put them on a diet, they start to feel better. And when we do adrenal fatigue treatments, people start to feel better within 2 to 3 weeks, but it takes them months for their saliva to rebuild, because saliva is really the reserve of the vitamins, minerals, nutrients in your body. And to rebuild those storage in your system takes a long time. But it's a great indicator for people, because they're like, listen, even though you're feeling good, you need to stick with the alkaline diet, you need to stick with the nutrients, you need to stick with the lifestyle changes, because even though you're feeling much, much better, and if you were seeing a regular medical physician, they'd say that, great, we're telling you, you're still not healthy. There's a difference between feeling good and being healthy. When you're feeling good and your saliva pH is 7.2, you have a really good chance of being healthy. But if you're feeling good and your saliva is still 6.0, you still have a ways to go.
That's interesting. You've got about 5 minutes. You can talk about, we can't run over, but you can talk about anything you want to talk about.
One of the things I'd like to talk about is really along the same lines is, there are huge amounts of information out there, and there are so many people walking around with so many problems and not enough answers. And I'd like everybody who's having this type of problem to look at adrenal fatigue. If you've been having problems, adrenal fatigue is a great place to look for answers. And there's no reason that people have to suffer. If your saliva pH is low, you already know there's a problem and you need to work towards that. People have to be their own best advocates now, because physicians, especially today, and I'm talking about medical physicians, and even a lot of chiropractors or physical therapists who are in these insurance companies, they're so overwhelmed by the process of, you know, the insurance, the forms, that healthcare becomes secondary. I mean, you have so much paperwork and so much certification to get before you can get the person any care, it becomes secondary, and you really, people have to worry about their own health. And adrenal fatigue is one of those things that you could actually try and take care of on your own. You could check your own saliva pH. You can find a physician who can actually test for adrenal fatigue and improve your overall health, whether it's physical, emotional, or in most cases, it's usually a combination of both of them.
I just want to say this real quick because I forgot to do it at the beginning. Even though Dr. Zodkoy is a healthcare professional, we are not attempting to treat or diagnose you on this radio show. Anything that you hear on this show is for informational purposes only. So I just want to make that clear. Don't want to leave that off. People don't want to get somebody after us for doing stuff, talking about diagnosing people on the radio. So sorry about that. So,
not a problem.
Where are you located?
I'm in Freehold, New Jersey. But again, people can reach me. I'll give you my email address. It's szodkoy, S-Z-O-D-K-O-Y, at hotmail.com. People can send me a note. And because of the program we use, especially the one we developed for the military, we treat people all over the world through, you know, Skype, emails, and lab testing through the mail. So anybody has needs a consult anywhere in the world, we take care of it now through the Internet. And it's unbelievably successful.
PTSD and the addictions, depressions, are you doing that anywhere at any facility right now? Oh, actually, my producer just said we've got 30 seconds. Sorry, so I guess give us your website
one more
time.
And... There's a nonprofit organization called We Soldier On out of Massachusetts that we're working with to set up clinics around the country.
Excellent. And your website one more time?
MonmouthAdvancedMedicine.com.
Thank you, Dr. Zodkoy. It has been a pleasure to have you on. I hope you'll come back sometime.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
Have a good evening. Good night.
You too. Bye-bye.